etiquette. Formal rules that governed everything, from which fork to use to what topics to discuss in polite company. Or so we've heard. Today, there is no etiquette in this world, and yet etiquette is required. How many messages should it take to set up a meeting? When you start seeing a new therapist, can you talk about it with your first therapist whom you are still seeing? Welcome to No Etiquette, the podcast where we address modern etiquette questions in a nonsense fashion. I'm Vivian Lee, coming to you from Singapore, and joining me on the line is my best friend, Sophia Bose, in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Hi, Sophia.
Hi, Vivian. I'm going to ask you a bad question. How are you?
What is it? Oh, what a bad question that I loathe. But rather than answer it, I will swerve and simply tell you something that happened in my week. An update from last week is I once again saw the person in my office meditating by the vacuum cleaner. Mm-hmm. Except that this week the vacuum cleaner was not there. And so I realized this is his spot. The vacuum cleaner is in his spot.
Oh my goodness. You know, this is I have to wonder, was there some sort of coercion? Like, was there a fight over this spot? Like, was there some sort of battle? You know, somebody has to move the vacuum cleaner. Maybe somebody liked that spot, but then that person can't. Like, I wonder if there any tension at any point or some sort of silent negotiation that happened.
I don't know, because one can't even have the vacuum cleaner is not offended and doesn't know the extent to which you're annoyed that the vacuum cleaner is in your spot. I don't know if he, I couldn't guess, but it's reminding me of something I read about once with regards to teaching, but also public speaking, but they observe in teaching. Mm-hmm. And it's that there's something called the power spot in a room.
Ah, okay.
And what this is, this is the concept, but they say, like, and if you go into any kind of, you know, lecture hall or classroom, you will notice that there is a spot in the room that the teacher will go and stand at because they feel powerful there. So it's sometimes it's the middle of the room. Sometimes it's behind the desk where the laptop is that controls the thing. It is the power spot. And it is the reason why it's called the power spot is that if you watch a bunch of people enter this room, the most powerful person will always go to that spot.
Wait. Oh, this is fascinating. Okay, wait. So so if there are multiple powerful people, would they all gravitate to that same spot if they hadn't seen where the other powerful person had?
Yes.
And so somehow a powerful person just like knows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They know what the power spot is and they go to it. And like I said, it could be the room setup, right? Like it could be behind the lectern, it could be behind, you know, where the controls are.
Vivian,
it's a function of how the room is set up, but yes, go on.
No, this is great. This is fantastic. This actually, I think, is mildly an etiquette question that I've thought about at much length, which is this.
All right.
And I know this is not, you know, I'm sure there's other things. This is just an interlude. When one is at like a work dinner, for example, how does one choose where to sit? Is there a power spot? In a friends gathering, too. In any situation where there's a table, is there a place that the most powerful person typically sits at?
Good question. To me, this is very tied to also, is the powerful person going to pay?
Oh, okay. I see.
Maybe not so for friends. We have two different situations here. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's very clear if there's someone who is paying and who is truly in charge of the meal.
And, say the person is paying. Where do they sit?
What they do is they sit. Okay, so if it's a rectangular kind of table, they sit at the head of the table.
By the way, Vivian, I love that you have the answers. You didn't even wait like 10 seconds even. You have this prepared.
I feel strangely confident in this.
Yeah, you are a power person, maybe.
I don't think so, but and I say this because it's, you know, it's probably because this is the seat I do not take. So I know which seat not to take.
Etiquette.
Yeah. Well, I'm not the power person also. it. I know my place. All right. So this is what I think it is. If it's a rectangular table, it is at the head of the table. So that is why they call it the head of the table.
Okay.
And I partly know this because I think we've made a joke. Sometimes I have this auntie who will take like me and my cousins out for lunch or dinner now and then. And my auntie pays. And we're very careful about which seat. Like, we've even joked, like, oh, you know, you shouldn't sit there. That's where she should sit because she's paying for the dinner. So if it's a rectangular table, that's very clear. And I think if you're being seated, especially if they're first, the wait staff will usually know to seat. They can kind of gauge, right? It's the person who made the reservation who comes in first. They'll seat that person there. And if it is a round table, and I think this is more of the case of a round table, especially if you're in a private room, but even if you're not, even if you're in a big room, the most important person sits at the seat that faces the door where people are coming in.
So that they can see when a person is coming in.
They can see when a person comes in, and they are the first person that is seen by the people coming in. And so they can, like, you know, greet the person or whatever it is, but that is the power. Yeah. It's a view of people coming in.
Oh, Vivian, this is changing my worldview in so many ways. I think now, I know when I walk into a room now, I will automatically think about where the power spot is and then judge people based on where they stand. This is great.
What's amazing about the power spot, and I really read, I think it was even a paper. I mean, it's not very official, but it is like an observable phenomenon. That everyone knows it too. Like, if you're not the power, you don't go to the power spot.
How do people know this? Like, this, nobody has told me this. I mean, I'm sure it's an observation thing, but maybe, do people talk about it?
No, it's just, it's, you know, the thing about which seat to sit at the table, maybe someone has to kind of teach you, or you sort of, you know, every time. But I think there's something to, you know, walk into a room, and you know, the topic of how one walks into a room is a separate story. It has to do with, I think, you know, who's facing everybody else, right? Or who's, I think you'll know it when you go into a room.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. No, this solves a lot of problems. Because I do struggle in those situations with where to sit.
Well, see, this reminds me of the second part of your question, is if it's friends. That, I think, is, that's kind of tricky. And now that I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to, this is kind of unconscious, right? I think it's someone who is hosting in the sense of either they organized it or they're kind of the leader of the group. Again, you know, in a very informal way, right? Probably the person who pulled the gathering together, or... maybe if it's that person's birthday, you know, they should be in the sort of central location of the table, right? Like, either the head or in the middle of people. That's where I would put, that's what I would consider more important, because more people talk to that person, and there's a lesser chance of you being stuck at the end of the table where you're kind of ignored and unable to converse with other people. Or, you know, I'm thinking about the last time, if it's really just friends and you're all about the same, it can have something to do with whoever gets there first will maybe take the seat furthest in, which I think is also sometimes the, so just so everyone else can join easily.
Okay. So with friends, it's really just more you order you get in. And
sort of, but you know, this is a little subtle, because say it's friends and there's somebody, just everyone, there's the person who's the center of the group, who everyone just likes talking to this person more. They're not necessarily, you know, better than anyone else, or you just know that, I'm thinking of a group, we know that this person will be the easiest to this person will facilitate general conversation most comfortably.
Okay.
And they're not, you know, they're not unhappy to do this.
I think that very thoroughly answers my question, Vivian. Now I feel so equipped to walk into a room and to sit on a table, or with a table, in a table, by a table.
Well, the ultimate power move, I think, would be to sit on the table.
Oh, my goodness. You know, I really want to try that now at some point. I really do. I won't, but maybe one day I'll tell you about it.
It feels like, it would be such a provocative thing to do if you went to dinner with people and everyone sat around the table and you got up and sat on the table and commanded things from there. I think that would be worth trying.
You know, Vivian, this happens, like, this happens in school. Like, I remember we used to have, like, picnic benches, and everyone would be sitting sort of around it, and then there'd be that popular cool kid who would just, like, sit on top of the picnic table.
Yep.
Right? But that's the only circumstance in which I've seen that happen.
Well, you are ready. You're ready to try it out in a social setting where you're required to take control. And lovely. That reminds me, though, do you have an update on the coffee situation from last week?
Fortunately, I do not. I've been quite delinquent in my email, and I've been sending a lot of I am sorry emails.
Oh.
You know? Like I said, I'm very unabashed about my apologies. I might have to reel back in some of my apologies, because at this point it just looks kind of sad. I did, however, include... and I don't know whether this was polite or not, but I responded to one email that was sent to me on Eid. I didn't respond to it on Eid.
Okay.
I responded to it today, which is, I guess, a couple of days after Eid. And I apologized for not responding to that email. And I said that I was away for Eid. And what this did is the response, you know, the person immediately said, well, happy Eid. And then I had a moment where I was like, did I just try to justify my delinquent email and force this person to wish me a happy Eid? And I had it. Yeah, so I don't know if that was the most polite thing to do or not. But in any case, I don't have an update. I'll get to this. I shall let you know.
I think you were forcing the person in that you were not, I don't think, and we'll get back to this, but you weren't passively aggressively sort of saying, you know, you weren't implying that it was this person's fault for not knowing that you were away for Eid.
Right? No, I don't think I was. I was, I think, more explaining that that was why I hadn't gotten to the email. Yeah.
Yeah. No, seems great. Maybe they were very happy to wish you happy Eid. Sometimes it's kind of...
Yes, but I'll have an update. Hopefully, next time.
And you know what? One must never apologize for being delinquent with email. That is simply... That may be the one... The general... As much... You may send apology emails, but...
I see.
It's a losing battle with email.
Well, I will tell you this. I have a colleague. Who... I don't know that he quite prides himself in his etiquette, but I think he did do a stint at some sort of, what do you call them, finishing school. And he said to me, an email must be responded to within 24 hours. And this man actually will do that, like, sometimes. And I'm at this point pretty sure he has some sort of reminder set on his Outlook that... When it gets to, I don't know, 2 hours before the 24. But yes, this is what he told me. Rule of thumb. Business rule must be within 24 hours. I don't know if that's real or if that's just him.
This is a casualty of our nonsense no etiquette world, where people have expectations that they feel are the standard and are not. I think it is fair if you say, I respond to emails within 24 hours. Sometimes I would do this or have this on my syllabus, and this grew to kind of, maybe it became like, I endeavor to answer urgent emails within 24 hours or something, or, but, you know, please expect this many days for reply or something. And I think it's informing people what response time they can expect from you is good, because that helps with planning. But I don't think you can expect email turnaround to be 24 hours unless that really is some kind of across the board expectation in your team or something. I personally think 24 hours is extremely tight unless, yeah, circumstances, you know.
Okay. Well, there you go.
24. Ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I feel a little bit better. That's probably why I've been apologizing so much, because I've been not doing this 24-hour thing.
It's not been reciprocated.
Yeah.
It's so, I mean, just because one can turn around an email within 24 hours does not mean that one ought to expect that of everyone.
I have a question.
Sure.
Should one thank somebody for an email that is responded to very fast?
Sometimes I do, if I want to improve our relationship.
Interesting. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Good. Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Do you?
It depends. So I've noticed that when I email with some of the students that I work with, if I respond, you know, within a couple of minutes, I think almost all of them will acknowledge that somehow. I don't know whether it's just because it's unusual, or they'll always say something like, thank you for such a prompt response, something to that effect. It's happened almost every time. Which makes me wonder if maybe other people are just very slow. But
I wonder. I don't know what the case is for them. I'll do it when I'm genuinely happy and maybe wasn't expecting to get a prompt response and it was helpful. Like, maybe especially if it was just a quick question that has saved me a great deal of time of thinking about. But I think the reason why I don't like to do it too much is I don't want to normalize the expectation of a quick response.
Yes. I agree with you.
I don't want to get into an arms race of it.
Around it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because then that person thinks that that's the behavior. Yes.
Yep. I don't want to reinforce this behavior, even though I am at times grateful. And sometimes I'm almost not. I almost don't want such a, you know, it means that this other poor person is just, you know, yoked to firing off emails.
This is true.
As soon as possible. And I don't want that life for this person. Unless it really is their job. You know, unless it's like very, right, like a very specific, you have a tight window for something, you really need a reply fast from this other person, you're grateful you're getting it, something like that.
You know, I wonder at some point, and maybe at some point we're going off topic, but this is, I think it's related to etiquette. So I wonder if at some point, like, we are viewing emails as chat. So this colleague of mine that has that 24-hour turnaround, he is also very will not often use salutations in the email. So, like, we'll sort of directly go to business, right? So we'll be I need XYZ, or do you have XYZ? And then we'll respond, like, you know, there will be an entire email that's just one word, two words, or such.
Yeah, he's using it like chat.
So the expectation, I mean, I think that norms around this are different everywhere. Maybe is it increasingly okay to not have salutation? Like, if we're using email so much, are we treating email like letters, which they are not?
I don't know, what are your thoughts? Poor email is caught between letters and chat. And is often required by people to sort of fill each at different times.
Yes.
Because at times, email is basically the formal letter now. Sometimes, if you need to send something more formal, you go from chat to email. But then it's also, it's same speed as chat, kind of. And it's better for certain things. So it has to play, poor email is caught in the middle, has to play both roles.
In the middle.
Reviled by all. No one likes it anymore.
This is true.
So.
Well, that was my question.
I hope that helped you some.
I think that did. Helped me some.
It is sort of related to our main etiquette topic of the day, and that is about chatting. So here's my etiquette story. Out of nowhere, I look at my WhatsApps, and I have this weird message, and I can see the beginning of it, the preview, without tapping the message, and it says something like, "Hi, I think you sent the wrong emoji." Wow. And I don't have this number. Mm-hmm. So it's not someone I know. I can see it's a Singapore +65 number. So it doesn't immediately seem like a scam as much as others, but it's definitely strange. Like, "Hi, I think you sent the wrong emoji." And, you know, over WhatsApp, one gets a lot of phishing messages. Mm-hmm. Usually kind of like, the one I get the most is like, "Hi, I'm here. I've landed. You know, thanks for you're here to arrange for my ride." Mm-hmm. It's clearly some kind of weird phishing thing, but I looked at this message and I hadn't even read the whole thing yet, but I thought, this is really weird. This is a weird, what are they trying to get at, this phishing message?
Yeah.
I think you sent the wrong emoji.
So cryptic.
Mm-hmm. And so I was wondering, like, should I just delete this? And then I thought, you know, I'll just open the message. There's nothing, you know, you can't lose all your money by opening a message.
This is
so
true.
So I open the message yet. I look at the message and that is basically all it says. I think you sent the wrong emoji, and there is a picture attached to it, and the picture hasn't downloaded, I think because I have it set to not download, maybe if I'm not on Wi-Fi or if I don't know the person. And so I look at this, I think, what is this weird message? I'm trying to think, it's probably not a scam, and the curiosity gets the better of me, and I think no harm can come of this. I'm going to look at the message. And so the picture loads. I'm kind of as all this is happening, I think I was in between doing other stuff, and I can see that it is a screenshot of this big WhatsApp chat group that I am in for rabbit adopters. And if I may plug this group of rabbit adopters in Singapore, this is probably my favorite WhatsApp chat.
That is lovely. I was just gonna say, I can't think of a more like heartwarming kind of WhatsApp group.
It's this huge group. It's the only group I like to be in because every day people are just sending pictures of their rabbits.
Oh.
People are, you know, asking questions, getting good answers. It's a really nice, supportive group. And you know, it's just nice for, you know, rabbit owners are kind of rabbity themselves. Like, we like to keep to ourselves, but we like a nice little, we like to share our rabbits. So this is my favorite group. And I can see that she has sent like some screenshot of this. And my first thought it was, I think I know what this is. Like, recently, and this is a sad but important use of the group, is whenever a rabbit is sick or has passed, everyone sends condolences. And you know, with the attitude towards life that a rabbit owner must have, rabbits pass away very suddenly all the time. Like, I would say pretty a couple times a month. We have a rabbit go. Yeah, they're elderly or they're ill, and it's a pretty big group, and many of these people have a lot of rabbits. And so it's really, you know, at first I thought, you know, this is a little sad, but it's such a good, you really want people to help you mourn and people to remember your rabbit and people who get it. And people are very, very, very kind. So this rabbit passed recently, and I remember, because it was a little, I don't always respond to these, but the owner was really distraught, and the rabbit had gotten ill, and it was like over a couple of days, and we were all hoping this rabbit would pull through. But I remember leaving a heart emoji on one of the person's messages, and I thought, this must be it, because the heart emoji is used in different ways by different people. Some people think it only means when you love something, like, you know, like, "Oh, I just got married," and people send you the heart emoji. Some people, like me, use it as the kind of condolence. Like, I'm sending love to you. I don't love that this thing has happened, but I'm sending love to you, partly because WhatsApp doesn't have the hugging emoji that Facebook has, that I actually think is pretty... I think it was introduced during COVID, and it's quite useful because it's like a hugging person, and they look a little sad. It's got this very mixed expression on its face, and it's a consolation without being too
right. Without being like tear faced, right? Or without being
tear faced, It sort of serves that purpose, and there isn't that in WhatsApp. And so I use the heart, but I know that some people don't think it means that. And I at a quick glance, I thought, maybe this person you know, who's not even the person who lost the rabbit, someone else in the group whom I don't know, mm-hmm. coming out and telling me, hey, I think you used the wrong emoji. And so mm-hmm. my first thought was like, I think I even responded, oh, thank you, to this person, just to kind of yeah. like, thanks, yes. got it, or something. Right. And I had no intention of fixing the emoji because it had uh-huh. been, you know, some time. You know, a lot of chats had come in since then. It's not like it was whatever my chat was sitting at the yeah. bottom.
Right.
I figured, you know, the moment has passed.
Yeah.
And then I did something else and I thought, you know, actually, let me just, I was in such a hurry, let me just see what the screenshot was.
Mm-hmm.
And to my horror, what I realized was it was, I think, to the very message of the rabbit's passing, which I don't even remember sending. Mm-hmm. And I had tried to send everyone, a lot of people had sent the crying emoji. And mm-hmm. I, in a rush, thought, all right, I will also send the crying emoji. And what I had actually mm-hmm. sent was the laughing emoji oh, with the no. tear coming down its face because it's laughing.
Oh, no. Oh,
because I was
goodness.
In such a rush, which is not what this is not the time one should fire off a rushed message.
Yes.
And so the screenshot showed, you know, you can see all the emojis people have sent and there's uh-huh. there is a laughing one and it looks awful.
It's just by itself, right? Because it's not stacked yeah. up with the others. Oh my
it's
goodness.
It's not stacked. You can see it and it oh. looks so terrible. And so I immediately went and fixed it. And I think oh. I sent an extra thank you message to the person like, mm-hmm. oh, I made such a bad mistake. You know, yeah. thank you so much for telling me. Mm-hmm. And this person was so gracious and said, no problem. I figured it was the wrong one. You know, wanted mm-hmm. to let you know.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of this interaction, I thought that was a really high etiquette thing of this person to do.
It absolutely was.
It was because I think a lot of times you shouldn't correct another person.
Mm-hmm.
Or unless it's a terrible, a really bad mistake. Or if it's yeah. even a small thing, you can correct another person. You should just mm-hmm. let it pass. And you, especially if you'll never interact with them again or it's online mm-hmm. or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this person saw the crying, the laughing emoji. You know, her heart went out to this person who would receive it. And, mm-hmm. you know, they took the trouble to go look at who had sent it and thought, mm-hmm. this must be a mistake. Let me notify this person.
Mm-hmm.
Best things to do. And I received it well and I fixed it. And, you know, even if no one else ever knows that this was solved, it was a mm-hmm. it was a pretty small thing and it was a good correction. And at no point did this person assume the worst of me.
That is such a lovely story. The people in this WhatsApp group are such solid human beings.
They're good people.
That is a good thing to do. Well, however, mm-hmm. I think the fact that they're such good, that this person, this woman, I think did such a high etiquette thing. But yep. I did have this like one wicked thought while you were talking, which is, you know, you have this like gorgeous community oriented rabbit WhatsApp group. But what mm-hmm. if there was like a human on there that, you know, did things like purposefully laughed when someone's rabbit died? Or, you know, was somehow malicious in tiny ways. How do you kick somebody out of a WhatsApp group?
Oh, this is a very big topic.
Also, this will derail our other thing, but it was just my, I was like, oh, yeah. you know what? What if she'd done that on purpose?
I think it's kind of, and you know, this is a, it's a good question, but it's a dull, dreary subject because it is just, it has to just be handled well. You know, I think it's one yeah. of those, like, the moderator has to have rules, and if yeah. someone breaks them, you warn them, and then
okay,
you do this.
Yeah.
No and it's, yeah. I mean, it's not that we don't need to, we may tackle this at a later date, especially
not.
If one is
it
in
is
that position.
Dreary.
But it's dreary. But
it's so dreary.
I've got to say, you know, and this is not to, you know, this does just escape the question to say, never has there been an issue in this rabbit group. It is just one of those pure, yeah. lovely, maybe this is why, another reason why pets are so dear. I think just, it really brings out the good in people and no one has used this group for ill the entire time I have been. And you know, it helps that this is a little bit of a closed group because it is only for adopters, I think. Mm. I don't think mm-hmm. even potential. So it's in a way, it's,
aww.
Yeah, it's a little, there's some yeah. screening, but I can't, yeah. I'm sure there are people who can both own rabbits and be mean online, but
yeah.
this group has, this group that overlap so far has not occurred in this group. Mm-hmm.
I think that woman did such a classy thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think she handled it very well.
She handled it well. It was her way of going about it to a total stranger, right? This could have been a very thankless task. I was reminded of a quote I had really loved when I was teaching, which is, a good teacher is someone who is able to help you change your mind without shame. I thought of this a lot when I was teaching. And it reminded me of a phrase I encountered reading.
I'm going to write this down.
Please do. Oh, yes. Please do write down my words.
Yes, I shall.
You should put them in a little black book of your etiquette sayings or something. That would be really.
I should.
But there was a phrase in a short story by Tatiana Tolstoya, which I just happened to be reading this week, and it was humility without humiliation, or humility that was unhumiliating. Which is not exactly the same thing, but I do think the most, you know, the best learning experiences are when you're most willing to take correction is if you do not feel any shame from the person offering it to you at any time. And of course, this is a really ideal situation. It maybe is, you know, depending on the severity of the offense. But
it's such
it was
a
nice
skill,
to be on the receiving end of it. Yeah, because this person could have been so obnoxious with when people are correcting other people, especially online, especially strangers, especially when they think they're in the right, they can be so snotty about it. So self-righteous.
It's kind of like how, you know, people are more motivated to write a review of a product that they don't like than they are to write a review about a product they do like. You know, so like the involved work that she had to do, and like she had to take a screen cap, she had to like, you know, it doesn't sound like very much work, but it actually does feel like a lot of work.
It's many steps.
Many steps. And usually people are only moved to do that when they're mad or like when they're, you know, when they're upset somehow. She did it from a place of concern and kindness and
and not wanting to bring down the other person, right? Because you could do all of the above, like you said, or like the negative review or something, because you want to like take down this other person. Even just to catch someone in an innocent mistake, sometimes one wants to get a lot of joy out of that. But nope. It was pure.
It is a wonderful story, Vivian. I'm so glad that happened to you.
That was a moment of... Have you corrected someone over chat or anything? Has it gone well or poorly for you? Because I remembered one more thing I wanted to mention with this. Shout out to this person. Is this person did not correct me in the main chat, because that would be the really smarmy way to do it. To be like, you know, at me, you know, at the person and go like, did you send the wrong emoji? Or, you know, even at you, I think you sent the wrong emoji or something. There could have been such obnoxious ways to do it.
Yes. There's so many ways in which it could have gone wrong. I have to say that this kind of situation has never quite occurred to me. I think in general, I just don't have very many things to correct. Well, you know, I feel like things just seem right. You know, like most of the chats that I read, if anything, I'm the kind of person that would do the mistake. Or, but I've never quite had an encounter like this. I can remember.
Yeah. It's hard. I think it's also hard. I think I could probably, if I cast my memory back, think of chats where someone was being a little rude or something, where probably it was just ignored, you know, if it wasn't too awful. It is actually, I think, you know, if you're not being self-righteous about it, it is quite a brave thing to do to even correct someone when it has been an innocent mistake. You have to kind of stick your neck out for it. And this person did it for the love of rabbits.
Yeah, so, that is the most noble reason. What could be better?
So that was my etiquette story from this week. It has
was
not,
a very heartwarming one. It's good. Because usually etiquette stories don't end that way.
That's true. It was a story of good etiquette. And to balance it out for, you know, how could we end on such a note, I have a question involving ill etiquette that I would like us to answer.
Okay.
That is our listener question for the day. It comes from James from Singapore.
Okay.
And it is as follows. Dear No Etiquette, I would like to be more passive-aggressive in my texting. What is the most passive-aggressive emoji?
This is such a great question.
Thank you, James, for asking it. Have you at any point wanted to be more passive-aggressive?
Me, myself, Sophia?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I think I tend to be aggressive.
Straight out aggressive.
Straight out, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Make no mistake, yeah, to be on the receiving end of passive aggression is unpleasant. And I think that is when one really wants to be mean or nasty or pushy, those are the times when one chooses passive aggression.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a very...
It's not nice.
Yeah, it's definitely not nice. It's very frosty. It's very frosty behavior.
It's even worse than outright aggression in certain ways.
I would say so. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've done this.
Oh.
I actually have. Okay, I will tell you. So this colleague of mine, the one who wants the 24-hour turnaround time, sometimes it won't happen on his end. Mm-hmm. So he won't respond to something.
And within 24 hours.
Yes, not even 24. Sometimes it would be, I don't know, 74 hours or 72. Is that 3 days? and at that point, usually if enough time has passed at that point, you know that he's just not going to respond to that email unless I bump it. And so then when the bumping it point comes, and this is the aggression part, I forward the initial email I had sent. And then I say,
back to him. Oh, back to him. Yeah.
Back to him. Mm-hmm. And say something like, I don't know, checking on the status of this. But then I add an emoji. Smiling emoji, just smiling, just like a small smile, not like no teeth showing, not laughing. It's just like a, you know, just a one line, like following up, small smile.
And this is not the colon parentheses one, right? This is the actual like little face,
the actual little face, a smile, a small smile,
small smile.
So I think that small smile, if you receive it from me, I think I'm probably mad at you.
The touch of passive aggression.
Yes. Yeah. What about you, Vivian?
Okay, quick question before I continue with this, but do you think he knows that that is a signal of passive aggression from you?
Such a good question. I think I have degrees of passive aggression. That is degree one. Degree two is the same email without an emoji. So usually the one without, because I tend to be an exclamation mark user.
Okay.
You can sort of, you know, you can sort of tell my tone. So if I'm, so, you know, the first email, the first follow-up one, there's no exclamation marks for sure. And there's a tiny smile. Then if there's just like no tiny smile and no exclamation marks, that just seems angry. From somebody else, it'd be quite normal. But I think for me, that is quite aggressive. And so, yes, I'm pretty sure he knows.
That's the next level. Okay.
That's my next level.
And you expect him to know it because he has a progression that he can compare, right?
Yes. And he has, like, a bank of just, like, my, like, the way I email, right? Like, I don't think ever seen me email without an exclamation point.
Got it. Okay. So I'm getting this granular because what I'm realizing is, to some degree, I think passive aggression itself is not so, it's not that subtle and case, you know, specific, but I did some research this week.
Oh.
And if you can call, I gathered some data. I attempted to gather some data to answer James' excellent question. And the kind of shocking thing I found, which in some ways should not shock me because I already know this is a no etiquette world and this simply proves what we already know to be true, but there is a huge variation in what people think is a passive aggressive emoji. And it was such a big variation that it made me realize that sometimes maybe we don't always know when people are being passive aggressive towards us. via emoji.
Oh.
There was such a spread.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. So are you ready to hear the results of my very unofficial data gathering?
Yes, yes, yes.
I would love to hear this. So I will say it was almost unique, but there were few repeats. And so when I'm ranking it, that's sort of like a tiny spike when I'm saying the winner. Mm-hmm. But what most people identified as the most passive aggressive emoji is the thumbs up emoji. But yes. With a lot of caveats. So the first is that there are perfectly neutral ways to use the thumbs up emoji. This is what makes it so sticky. So I brought up the example of, you know, I'm in another group chat of volunteers, and there's usually like a Sunday program. Mm-hmm. And they'll say like, here's everybody who needs to come. And we'll often respond, you know, no one wants to send a whole message, but we'll respond to that one with the thumbs up emoji. And that is not passive aggressive in any way. That is just like, yep, I'm there. And we don't even have to do it. There's no expectation. Like, if you don't do it, people don't think you aren't showing up, but it's just a noted kind of, it's almost like a more of a red receipt. And I sometimes do that at work when we give a fairly neutral response to something, like the meeting's at 3, thumbs up emoji by itself. We're not conveying anything beyond that. But in other cases, it is very passive aggressive to receive it by itself. Especially, I think, when there's already kind of a tense situation, that is when you really need to use a couple of words. Even if it's like, okay, see you there. It should not just be thumbs up emoji. That's passive aggressive.
I agree with this. So basically, the rule then, it sounds like, is unless there's some kind of like established within the group etiquette of that thumbs up being used, you don't hold thumbs up something. Like you,
yeah, I don't, yeah, up, you do not.
Yeah, you don't cold thumbs up. Okay, that makes
you don't cold thumbs up something. This is the other big caveat for the thumbs up. It is that, and no, you know, we don't hate boomers. Our parents are boomers. We are close to boomers, but boomers liberally use the thumbs up in all sorts of situations, they're not being passive aggressive. And some of it is for them. Sometimes it is, sorry, I don't mean to say us and them, but it is a quick emoji that they send because they are slow typers. Like, it's slow to write a message.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they gravitate towards using the thumbs up emoji.
Mm-hmm. It makes a lot of sense. It's like the period, right? Like, using a period at the end of a sentence is seen as quite aggressive.
Sounds angry. It sounds angry and aggressive, but people who come from a time when you ended your sentences with a period.
That's just proper behavior, and probably
and it's rude to leave off that period.
Right. I'm like, how have people lost all grammar? Is this true that America at some point, and this is such a tangent, but I actually just suddenly wondered if you knew this.
Yeah, let's talk about America.
I didn't grow up here, so. Is it true that like sometime in the 80s and 90s, the American syllabus decided that grammar was not important, and then they just didn't teach students, they just didn't teach grammar in schools to the same degree as they used to. Then they slowly started reintroducing it.
This is difficult for me to answer because I was not always in the U.S. at grammar learning ages.
I see.
But I will say, many Americans, but there's a camp of Americans who hate the run-on sentence with a passion because they were taught grammatically to be against the run-on sentence.
Okay.
And it was something I had to kind of enforce sometimes teaching. Like, I'd be like, don't use the run-on sentence because there were such stern guides about it. And it's funny to me because it really feels like a grammar rule that was pounded into some people at a certain point because I've realized that other languages don't have this grammar rule. It's not wrong to have a run-on sentence. It's not wrong in Chinese. I don't know if it's like ideal, but you can have a very long, very long comma-separated multi-sentence.
I see.
I found from reading the details by, I might say your name wrong, Aya Ginberg, which we are both reading now, the Swedish writer.
Yes.
which is a lovely book. But the translator's note at the beginning or the end, I think it's at the end, so I don't think you've read it. But the translator saying that in Swedish, you can have a really long, maybe run-on sentence, but just a very lengthy sentence. It's not wrong. And it was very tough to translate to English because you want the feeling of that book has such a feeling of like a tide pulling you in of memory. And you need the long sentences, but too long and an English speaker will balk.
I see.
So back to your point, I don't know how much grammar was and wasn't taught, but I do know that if you are a person who was subjected to the learning of grammar rules, you tend to be very offended when other people were not properly taught.
That makes a lot of sense. I did get corrected on my grammar.
Oh, really?
Last week. Ooh. So I was quite perplexed, actually. What was the sentence? I think, okay, this is poor grammar. I mean, this is basically wrong. I think I was just sleepy. Actually, this goes back to something you and I were talking about earlier with the power, the power space in the room.
Yeah.
But I think I said something like, I'll just sit on the table. I didn't mean sit on the table. I meant I'll sit.
At the table.
Okay. Yes, at. And I didn't use at. I used on, and then this person said it's actually at, not on. I don't know, it wasn't even me. I think I was going to place something on the table, and this person said it would be at the table. And then I said, no, it's physically on the table. And then he said, well, at the table. That was an impasse. What's correct here?
I think it would be on if you're placing something on. And in fact, if you're placing something onto, it would be onto as one word and not as two words.
Perfect. This is lovely. Vivian.
Go back and correct this person.
Right, so it wasn't even at, it was onto. I'm going to place this onto.
Yeah, on or onto.
On or onto. That was incorrect. All right. Would that you had been there.
Would that I had been there. Yeah. I would have leapt to your defense. I might not even have. You know, I hate, sometimes for work I do have to correct grammar. Like, that is my function is to correct grammar. And I kind of win because it is so, either because some people take it so badly, because it's kind of hurtful. It makes it sound like you don't speak proper language. Right. It is such a minor
etiquette
thing
to correct someone's grammar. Sorry, I talked all over you, but I
often
realized.
Think so. No, I actually do think so. Unless unless it is a really important instance where you are correcting grammar to clarify meaning. And that alone is the function of grammar, honestly. Correct. Well, maybe not that alone.
The true function. But I mean, really, but yeah.
It's a very important, the key function of grammar, why grammar exists, is to clarify things. So if it is a situation where it is, putting at versus on a table, if that is unclear and needs to be corrected, then it needs to be corrected. But if it's so obvious from context or something, I think it is a little impolite, unless the person wants their language corrected.
Thank you. I'm a little bit upset about this now because I was correct. Well, there you go. Now I know.
And now that you're upset, let's prepare you for the situation in that you decide to respond with a passive aggressive emoji. You may not need to. it is a separate issue how good behavior it is to whether it's right or not to be passive aggressive. But setting that aside to help our friend James who asked a question.
Yes.
The second place for most passive-aggressive emoji is the one you mentioned. It is the small smile.
Really?
I thought
I was the only one.
You're not the only one. There is some consensus as far as emoji consensus goes.
Wow.
I heard other people raise this.
This is lovely.
And it's people who said the same thing. Please do. It's the same thing that people said, where they'll say, usually I send like the grinning emoji or like, I personally like the sort of like blushing cheeks smile.
Yes.
It looks friendly.
I know that one. I like that one.
And so what you're doing is you're communicating a degree of, you're almost like an unhappy smile.
Yes. A tight-lipped smile is what you're doing.
Tight-lipped smile.
Yes.
Yeah. And let me tell you, that is the only, pretty much the only consensus that I heard. everybody else I talked to gave different emojis. So I can tell you what some of them are.
I would love to know.
My personal answer mm-hmm. was the emoji that has its, like, I'm doing it now, but it's got its fingers in sort of the L shape, and it's looking up to the side, and it's puzzled, and it has a little quirking eyebrow, and it's like, hmm?
Because I know what you're talking about.
I use that emoji when someone is asking a question, but they're not truly asking a question, they're correcting the person. Example.
Mm-hmm.
I'm here at the restaurant. We said we're meeting at 3, right? Frowning, quirking emoji.
Yes.
And this person is not truly, it's not the case, because you could be like, didn't we say, you know, are we meeting at 3? If you're really but this person's not doing that. They're correcting everyone else. Yeah. They're saying, all of you are late. I am here. We said we would meet at 3.
It is very passive aggressive.
I think it comes at the end of questions.
You know, this is going to sound bad, but for some reason, I associate that with, like, men. I've only ever seen men use that.
Really?
In my personal experience of life, yes. I have never seen a woman use that. I've seen a number of men use that to be passive aggressive.
Huh.
Yes.
Hmm. That would be something to investigate further. When I was asking, I asked pretty mixed groups, and I kind of heard across the board, there wasn't a big split, I would say, between. But what was interesting is, like, we were having this as a conversation, right? And so it was like, someone would name an emoji, and everyone at first would go like, oh, you think that's the most passive aggressive? Uh-huh. But when we discussed it, people would go like, oh, okay, I can see that. So another one that came up, actually, this may have come right after small smile emoji. A few people named this. This was very controversial, and this is the praying hands emoji.
Ah, I see that as a very benign one.
Right. So I think it can be used in a passive aggressive way if you are making a passive aggressive ask. So say you're asking someone to do something that ought to be your job, but you're trying to push it off at someone else.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, hey, can you send the email to this person? Or could you please help and do this? Praying hands emoji. And I see that as like a little nudge of like, how about you do it? I don't want to do it.
Just while you were talking, Vivian, I realized I actually did see the prayer hands used in a very passive aggressive way in two contexts, two separate times. Actually, I would say maybe the same context at two separate places. Two separate workplace kitchens in which somebody left a note about, I don't know, something needing to be washed or put away. And both cleaned times up. They did have that praying hands thing at the end of that printed out sign.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. I think it's very when you're making an ask. Yes. You know that you're being a bit, you want to put some anger behind it.
In office kitchens. Yes.
Yep. But you want the appearance of you're still being like, you know, you're not you're not like that raging. There's a place for that. Especially in a kitchen situation. But like, you're still trying to be like, you know, like, let's maintain the office nicely. And you put the praying hand emoji. So but like you said, that one doesn't come immediately to mind because there are many benign uses. Uh-huh. Of course, number one is, I'm praying for you, which, you know, can go both ways. Some people, there's all kinds of good and bad ways to send an I'm praying for you message. Yeah. But it is the safest emoji to put at the end of I'm praying for you. If you're not bold enough to use the heart, because maybe your situation doesn't merit it, or maybe it's sad and you don't think it's a consolation, you put the praying emoji. Very safe. Praying hands. Or there must be other uses, right? Where it's kind of like, I'm in a group where sometimes if someone shares some news, it's a little worrying. Not too bad. Like, I'm sick. I can't make it today. I'm sick. People will send the praying hands emoji.
Aw. You know, and also, and I think I've also seen it, like, at the end of a thank you, but when there's many of them, like 10 of them, that's usually not passive aggressive. You know? Have you ever
like
seen
10
that?
Praying hands?
Yeah. Like, thank you so much. And then, lots and lots and lots of them, you know?
Yes. 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 Like, I think you're right. That is a gratitude emoji.
That's like super gratitude. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Super gratitude. When someone has gone above and beyond and you're so thankful. And maybe, again, the hearts are too. The heart is so tricky, isn't it? Because sometimes it's romantic.
Oh, this is a great question, Vivian. Because I, for several work emails, if someone has done something that was hard or whatever, and I was very grateful, I would put hearts. And I typically do that. But I have noticed one thing. I only do that with female coworkers. I have never done that with a male coworker, which makes me think that potentially in a same sex kind of situation, maybe it's more acceptable and maybe not seen as romantic. I don't even know. But yes,
You have a feeling that it can be taken as romantic, and for you, you know, then confining it to same-sex relationships for you is a you wouldn't want to give a man the wrong signal with the red heart emoji work email. But I'm saying this because I have had the same thought. Sometimes we have like some stickers we send in work chat, and sometimes the really effusive ones I will like hesitate to send to a male colleague. Just to not, you know, and I'll pause for a moment. Sometimes I'll, but you know, it is a little more. I feel freer sending it when I don't feel that there's any room for someone mistaking it.
Right, 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 right.
For a flirtatious or
yes,
taking on a sign of some sort. So the red heart emoji is a little. It can be a little, but I do think it's very appropriate for familial love.
This is true. Oh, absolutely.
I think that's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's you just don't want it taken the wrong way by accident.
Yeah.
All right. Running down the list, another one that I think I raised and some people agreed with was the upside down smiley emoji.
Not seen that used very much.
Oh. So the way I see it used most often in work chats, and again, this is just me, but it's when someone has done something kind of dumb and it's business as usual for this person. Like, oh, this person's done this, you know, and it's, we're not, so we're not doing it, making fun of a specific person. It kind of like, or just like, here's this thing that's happening again.
You can see that as being passive aggressive. Yeah.
Yeah. But I have seen it kind of fixed to the end of, maybe I've seen it on message boards or something.
Yeah.
I find it quite passive aggressive when used in a slightly pushy way. Because I think that's a little, they're so rare where, you know, okay, the I'm trying to think of like, what's the, you know, the not aggressive way that this emoji is used. And I think maybe sometimes people use it when they're having like a bad day or something. Like, my car battery died upside down. Something like that.
Yeah. I can think of
something like that. And I think I'm coming to the end of the passive aggressive because some of them are just straight out aggressive. I think one more shout out would be I think that's actually kind of the end of one more shout out when this is a very hypothetical one because I was thinking maybe the boomer thing made me think maybe there's a generation gap. So I talked to two of my cousins. One is my age. So both of us said we don't really understand Gen Z's emoji. We don't know them very well. We got to ask. We think it might be different. Her hypothesis is that it is the emoji that is smiling, but a tear is coming down its cheek. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
No, I don't think I've seen that.
It's a little, it's like deep in the menu. I don't use it very much because you have to kind of find it.
What does it that mean? Was,
it's, she thinks she uses it, or she's seen it used by Gen Z, like, when something kind of, it's in a passive-aggressive way, like.
Like how? Like, in what instance would you use that?
Okay, I'm thinking of like a mean message, something like, maybe something like this. Hi, sorry, I can't make it for the gathering this Saturday. Maybe if you had told me about it earlier, I could have been there.
Like okay. I can see that.
Passive aggressive message.
Yeah.
And then smiling face, tear emoji. So you look like her saying, she was saying, it looks like you're being sad, but you're not really sad.
Yes.
And you're communicating all that through this emoji. You want to appear sad, but you want the other person to know you are not sad. That's what makes it passive aggressive.
I agree with you. I have not been the recipient of it, but
I don't see it too often. And then I thought, okay, I did this very last minute. I thought, I don't really know anybody that well to ask directly, but I have this other cousin who is several years younger than me, kind of in between Gen Z and Millennial. Mm-hmm. And this is my cousin Olivia. So I messaged her last night. First of all, I mortally offended her by suggesting that she was Gen Z. She was very upset. She said, how dare you? And at the end of it, she said, don't put me and Gen Z in the same sentence again.
Wait, what is Gen Z?
Yeah, okay, so that is another whole nother topic that we're not fully qualified to talk about.
Okay.
I'll give you her example. She was so angry. She was, she did the thing. She was motivated to correct me because she was furious. And gave a couple of examples. She said, I remember dial-up.
Huh?
She said, I make picture memes rather than TikTok and real memes. Said, I was there when, I think she said like flared jeans and maybe platform shoes. She was there the first time around that trend came about. Like,
I'm most convinced by her dial-up.
She really remembers it.
Okay.
She was alive and around.
Well, there you go.
She was affected in different ways. And at one point, she used the phrase, I'm not an elder millennial like you, which stabbed me in the heart. But I do agree.
So good.
Because I had not thought of myself, I don't think we're on the eldest end of millennial, but to her, I am an elder millennial.
Oh, wow.
And it was crushing. And lastly, let me think, what was like the nail in the coffin? Oh, no, this was not the nail in the coffin. I think I agree that the one was the best one. And but I did tell her, I think we're in different, the economy was different to us as millennials. And she's six years younger than me, and she agreed on this.
Okay, yeah.
Her experience as a millennial is a little bit different because so much happened. Mm-hmm. She corrected me. But she had suggested the thumbs up emoji she just did not have insight into Gen Z. She said, you know, I wouldn't know because I am not Gen Z.
I see. Okay, well, there you go.
So those were she said slightly smiling, smiley, and the thumbs up.
I feel very knowledgeable on this topic now. I'm so appreciative of this research that you did. I mean, this is some good stuff.
It was poor methodology. It was really like a ask to the people I saw that day and a few days around.
No, that's how research should be.
It's kind of like folk research.
No, I really like this folk research business. this is a question for maybe a different time, but I would love like some sort of research assignment, like a folk research assignment, like something we can ask people. Some sort of
We'll begin with most passive aggressive emoji.
Well, there
you can email in if you vehemently disagree. You can email noetiquettepodcast@gmail.com. We are also taking listener questions like this one that we had from James. Thank you so much, James. We hope you answered it. You have now a bevy to choose from, although you have the winners also. But maybe you'll introduce one all by yourself because there's no etiquette. And it was shocking to me how differently people interpreted emojis.
Absolutely. I discovered some emojis that I hadn't even known before. Like the teary smile.
And you're ready
face.
To use them.
Ready
and
to use them.
You, yep, and you can if you choose to correct that person who corrected your grammar and was wrong.
Yes, indeed. Had they done it over email or text, maybe I would have sent an upside down smiley and said something like, it is on or onto the table, sir.
Yeah. Oh, and you could send like a link to a grammar website.
Yes, a link. Oh, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. But we're making it clear that this is unpleasant. This is only if you want to be like unpleasant to somebody else.
Yes.
But, you know, yeah, there are many uses of etiquette. We are here simply to inform you of what, you know, the etiquette or no etiquette situation is. It's up to you how you want to use it in this no etiquette world. But until then, anything else to add?
Well, Vivian, I think you did a lovely job of responding to James's question and to all of my questions. And I'm very delighted to know that now there's a power spot in every room. I have something to look forward to when I walk into a room, you know, which previously I didn't. I would just walk into the room. But now I walk into the room with purpose. I mean, you've changed my life in a very little but real way. So thank you.
You're so welcome. Thank you. And thank you all, everyone, for joining us, listeners. See you next time here on No Etiquette. And until then, it is good etiquette to come up with interesting folk research topics that you can bring up at your next dinner party, where you may or may not sit at the power seat, but now you can with a powerful question.
Good night.